It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. We're temporarily presenting the show in a more concentrated half-hour format. That is so we can continue to bring you the latest, most important information about the COVID-19 outbreak in our region. Health officials have said that the new coronavirus spreads most rapidly in close environments. But what is being done to protect the health of inmates and workers in our state prisons? I spoke with Pennsylvania's Secretary of Corrections, John Wetzel, and asked him how concerned he is about the virus spreading among the 47,000 inmates in state prisons, in addition to staff members.
Very concerned. Been concerned for the past 6 weeks since we got the first briefing from Dr. Levine as a cabinet before there was even one case in Pennsylvania. So I think the good news is we had plenty of time to prep. Every one of our facilities has run every scenario imaginable, doing tabletop exercises as it relates to quarantine. But frankly, our posture right now is to really do everything we can to screen every staff member who's coming in. We've basically eliminated visits, in-person visits, I'll say, and we're medically screening everybody who comes in the facility. And our posture is to try to prevent getting that first case. Each one of our facilities has their own quarantine plan. So if we get a case in a facility, they'd be moved immediately to an isolation cell. We have the mechanism to track contacts, just like what's going on in the community. The vast majority of our efforts are preventative right now. Extra cleaning supplies. We're putting temporary hand wash stations in throughout the facility.
Well, let me jump in here. We know that 34 employees and inmates at the George W. Hill Correctional Facility, a Delaware County jail, are being self-quarantined after an employee tested positive for the coronavirus. So as of this time, no COVID-19 among Corrections Department workers or prisoners?
None yet. We have one prisoner who was tested. He had an influenza-like illness. And he's received the COVID testing. We're hoping for results by the end of the week. But that's it. Zero staff members and knock on wood, currently zero inmates. Everything we're approaching with abundance of caution.
Right. Usually, if an inmate complained of a sore throat, maybe even flu-like symptoms, realistically, would they get attention by medical staff? And now, are you encouraging inmates to come forward if they are feeling those symptoms?
Yeah, ordinarily, we do take it seriously because we've already had at least twice this year cases where influenza on a housing unit, 20, 30 people on a housing unit. So we've already had that protocol in place. It happens every flu season. But some of the things we've done with this one is, one, waived all copays, all medical copays around this, and two, really highly encouraging people, if they're not feeling well, to report it to us, and also having medical staff out on the housing units just observing and seeing if there's anyone who's providing symptoms in case people are afraid to report that. So we've ramped up our efforts, but influenza has always been serious business for us because, as you referred to earlier, you know, people living in relatively close quarters and those kinds of things. We have a high percentage of vulnerable inmates in our population also, about 12,000.
You're trying to sanitize the prisons, but what are you doing to improve the hygiene of the inmates?
Well, we're providing antibacterial soap and the cleaning stations, significantly increasing, like each area is being cleaned three times per shift, per 8-hour shift. Increased the cell cleaning, a lot of education. You're using the inmate channels for kind of public service announcements. You know, I've read some articles in some systems where they charge people for cleaning supplies and those kinds of stuff. We are providing everything we possibly can that we have within our possession. We also had to make sure that all the chemicals that we were using actually are chemicals that are likely to kill this coronavirus, which we have. That what's really unique about this virus with some of the chemicals is that the surface actually has to stay wet for a period of time. They call that dwell time, and as much as 10 minutes. So we provided specific direction. Like if you're using cleaning supply A, the surface has to stay wet for 10 minutes. Our transport vehicles, we now cleanse them after every use. Every right. Common area, we've cleaned after every use. So we're ramping it up to the extent possible, certainly.
You have suspended outside visits for the inmates. Secretary Wetzel. What are you doing to ease any maybe tension this might have caused? Because let's face it, this is their contact with the outside world.
Yes, and we are very concerned about that. So we're doing three things. One, five free phone calls a week. That'll start. It'll start this week. I'm not sure. We're just finalizing the contract for that now. So every inmate in our system, no matter where your house, will get up to five free phone calls a week, free emails every week. Again, five of those, and then we're launching for the first time the availability of doing visitation by Zoom. So I'm just going to ask visitors to be patient. We'll be sending out a link. You register for a 45-minute visit from your mobile device to a prison. Obviously, we haven't had visits for a week, so I'm sure there's going to be a backlog. We've never done this before, so I would guarantee there's going to be some blips early on. But we're really committed to try to keep that contact between the inside and outside in the manner possible that we can.
This obviously would be upsetting to the inmates, no visits. Had you any problems with reaction to this policy?
Actually, we haven't yet. Actually, the feedback we've gotten, and I literally just walked out of a meeting with every prison's administration and talking about what the tone is. The individuals who are incarcerated are appreciative for the information we're providing. They understand what we're trying to accomplish and how we're trying to accomplish it. They understand that we're trying to keep these connections. But, you know, we're trying to keep them safe, and we haven't locked down. There's a big fear that we're just going to go into system-wide lockdown, and that is not our intent. We're really focusing on keeping the environment normalized to the extent possible. But the reality is this is a marathon, not a sprint. You know, they're talking about this going into July, so we're not trying to do a long-term lockdown. And the inmates understand that trade-off, that we're trying to keep it normalized as possible, and some of the things that we have to do to protect them and our staff is the visits, and hopefully this Zoom thing, once we work through the bugs, will give them some contact coupled with the free phone calls and the free emails, some contact with the community. But right now, the tone in the facilities is relatively good.
Briefly, what other steps are under consideration? You said no lockdown, but what might you still be considering?
Well, there's stuff I didn't talk about. We're really reducing the number of inmates in one area at a time. Some of that includes reducing the number to 50 or less in chow halls in yards. So we're subdividing some of our yards so we can still get people out, keeping consistent staff on a housing unit. We're really cognizant of the need to be able to track if something happens. And then there's a whole nother plan if we get a positive case at a facility. We're exploring what happens if we start having staffing shortages. So there's myriad of different plans for different scenarios on the institution side of the house, and that doesn't even speak to on the parole side of the house. So we have myriad of plans, and we're ready to ramp up and hopefully keep it normalized as long as possible.
Pennsylvania Secretary of Corrections John Wetzel, thanks so much for your time and good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to the public about what we got going on.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. New modeling from ProPublica shows how an influx of patients infected with the novel coronavirus could affect our nation's hospitals. What if 20% of our population falls ill? What if 40? What if 60%? And how do hospitals react then if it happens all at once? Those questions are at the heart of how our local hospital systems are preparing for this outbreak as well. WESA health reporter Sarah Bowden is here to walk us through it all. Welcome, Sarah.
Hey, Megan.
So a lot of the research we've seen lately talks about this thing called flattening the curve. What would that look like here?
Well, we know that we're going to get something like maybe 40 to 60% of Allegheny County residents infected with COVID-19 eventually. But the goal is to not have that happen all at once. So ideally, maybe it's just over a very long period of time that everyone kind of gets sick instead of all at once.
What are our hospitals and healthcare facilities doing to try to prepare to, you know, kind of get in front of that?
Well, one of the main things hospitals are doing is making sure that there's enough space for all the potential COVID-19 patients that will eventually need to be hospitalized. And that includes converting space into negative pressure isolation rooms, which makes these rooms have a special ventilation system that makes sure that the air inside the room doesn't circulate to the rest of a building. And that's really important because there's a lot we don't know about this right now. And then what I've been told by people who've been talking to me off the record is that sometimes the communication, depending on the hospital, hasn't been that great with staff, especially nurses. But I think it kind of depends hospital to hospital.
Well, and you don't want to get patients that are there for, you know, maybe something less emergent, sick with something like COVID-19 while they're there, you know, for a different procedure or a different problem, right?
Oh, exactly. You don't want to go in for a broken leg or having your baby or whatever and then come out with COVID-19. So making sure that infected patients stay isolated is really important.
Sarah, that kind of speaks to space. What about staff? Do we have enough healthcare workers to take on the challenge that's coming?
That's a really good question because a lot of times the conversations around whether hospitals are ready really focus on space and beds. And staff is a whole nother question. You can have lots and lots of beds, but if you don't have enough nurses and doctors and other folks to make sure that those people are getting the support they need while hospitalized, like, what's the point?
And of course, doctors, nurses, all kinds of healthcare technicians, they're humans just like us. Often they have young children. The closure of daycares is expected to hit all parents and guardians pretty hard. Are you hearing anything yet from how the healthcare systems are going to handle? Are they stepping in to do anything? Do we know that yet?
The governor is providing a waiver to childcare facilities that take care of kids whose parents work in the medical profession. But it's not going to be easy.
Lots of unknowns. And of course, one of the major takeaways from the presidential press conference yesterday afternoon was that patients in France are presenting younger and younger. So definitely a concern all the way around. Sarah, you've been following conversations with Allegheny County Health Department Director Dr. Deborah Bogan. She says that the best guess right now is that roughly half of all the people in Allegheny County will become infected.
So if you look at other communities that are a few weeks ahead of us, their systems are getting overwhelmed, and we're trying to prevent that. So the best thing we can all do, we talked about asymptomatic people, if everyone stays home and doesn't interact, I mean, you can see our chairs are separated, we're trying to practice social isolation. It is very hard, but that's what we need to do, or else we will get faster spread of this virus in our community, and we will overwhelm our amazing hospital system here.
So, Sarah, if all of those people become sick, need extra care or hospitalizations, what's that going to do for the rest of us? Are there going to be enough resources for people who, say, have a heart attack or get into a car accident, you know, while this outbreak is still going on?
That's a really big concern. And the answer is, I don't know. And we are at the precipice of a major crisis that could get a whole lot worse for a very, very long time. So I'm lucky. I'm 32. I don't have any underlying health conditions. What happens if I get into a car accident and I need really intense, really sophisticated care to save my life? Right now, if I get to the hospital soon enough, I'll get that care. In a month, in a week, that may not be the case.
Sarah Bowden covers health and science for WESA. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thanks, Megan.
I'm Megan Harris.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. New election law in Pennsylvania allows registered voters to cast their ballots by mail. It's meant to make voting more accessible, and some organizers hope to use it to boost turnout. And 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins says, as the coronavirus spreads, there may be unintended benefits of voting by mail.
Elections in Pennsylvania can be close. Donald Trump won the state by just over 40,000 votes. And given margins like that, any change to voting rules could decide a race. In fact, just 2 years ago, the ability to vote by mail helped give a victory to Democrat Connor Lamb in a district Trump carried by double digits. After midnight, but before final results were in, Lamb addressed supporters.
It took a little longer than we thought, but we did it.
In that speech, organized labor was one of the first groups Lamb thanked. That's partly because unions encouraged their members to vote absentee.
We all waited for the absentee ballots to come.
Darren Kelly is the head of the Allegheny-Fayette Central Labor Council. Kelly represents a massive group of 100,000 union workers in western Pennsylvania. And on election day, he knew up to 700 of them would be working at a power plant in Indiana County and wouldn't be able to get to the polls. So Kelly made sure they voted absentee. Lamb won by 755 votes.
And there was no coincidence the absentee ballot numbers in Washington County, in Westmoreland County, in Allegheny County favored the candidate that are choosing because we educated and we were the sole group that had a true documented absentee ballot process, and we're so proud of it.
Thanks to the new voting law that went into effect in January, you don't need a reason to vote by mail. And Kelly plans to use those rules to get even more of his members and their families to participate.
Whether it is they can't get to the polls or traveling, it's going to allow us to get to sections of our population that have not had the chance to make the difference. And this is the opportunity that we are going to capitalize on.
But not everyone is as focused on it.
I have no plans to go out and push mail-in voting by pushing it.
That's Sam DeMarco, chair of Allegheny County's Republican Committee. He's not a fan of mail-in voting and points to Super Tuesday primaries in other states to explain why. A bunch of candidates dropped out right before those primaries, which meant that a lot of people who had already voted by mail cast ballots for candidates who weren't even running anymore.
I will say, however, the Republican Party will use all methods allowable by law here to try to ensure that our voters are heard. We have a lot of elderly. And the Republican Party here. And if it's more convenient for them, hey, I absolutely encourage them to sign up for the mail-in ballots and to vote that way.
It may also be more convenient for organizers, especially in communities that are political battlegrounds. Jamie Parapato is the executive director of Turn PA Blue, a grassroots group working to flip state and local seats for Democrats. She says her group will focus more on mail-in than voter registration. That's because she wants to specifically pinpoint turnout among Democrats, rather than unintentionally registering voters who will oppose her candidates.
You know, they're purple districts. You have to be much more strategic about it.
But Parapato sees another big advantage to mail-in voting.
With all these fears about coronavirus, people are terrified they're not going to have their chance to vote against Trump.
Experts say the coronavirus is especially dangerous for the elderly and people with underlying health conditions. And Parapato says those groups include some of the most engaged people she works with.
Hopefully this will be a faint memory, or it could be like a giant nightmare. So I think people with the uncertainty with that climate just want to make sure they get their chance to vote because they've been waiting so long for it.
Plus, voting by mail means you can vote and social distance at the same time. Pennsylvanians can apply for a mail-in ballot online at votespa.com. The deadline is April 21st. I'm Lucy Perkins, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. A reminder to keep up to date on how the spread of the new coronavirus is affecting our region. Go to our coronavirus blog that is updated throughout the day at WESA.FM. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Kylie Kozinski, and Megan Harris. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Hope you have a good day of good news.